Hi.
Hi.
I'm so happy to hear your voice.
Oh my God, I know I miss you.
I know. I wish I could see your face in person.
I know. It's horrible.
I know.
I hate it.
I know.
I hate it, but like, I know it's necessary. So I'm like trying to like not hate it too much.
Yes.
But like I was on a Zoom call last night for one of my really good friend's birthday.
Aww.
It was like a little birthday party. It was really cute. She had like games and stuff. It was really fun.
Cute.
But one of my other best friends was on it, and I texted her after, and I was like, I just wish I could hug you.
I know. I know.
I felt so pathetic. I was just like, I wish I could just hug you. Why can't we just hug?
Ugh. I know. I had grocery this morning, and I thought I would go early because I was like, it's Sunday morning, people will sleep in, I'll go early.
Oh, no, ma'am.
There were so many people there. I walked in and I started to have kind of this overwhelming wave of anxiety.
Totally.
I have to get out of here.
Totally.
So I, like, grab some broccoli. I was like, I'm out of here. Let's go.
Grab the closest thing near you. And it just happens to unfortunately be broccoli.
It was too many people. And I'm like, why are there so many people here?
Well, that's how I felt. So I had to get, I've said it on here before, but I have an autoimmune disease. And so regularly I have to get blood work done and like go to different doctors and like all that kind of stuff. So I had a couple of things I had to do at Quest Diagnostics, and they're still open and they're doing like a whole thing. They have everything. I was talking to the lady there and she was like, no, you know, we wipe everything down once the person leaves. Like, we have a whole system and a checklist we go through and like all of that. And I was like, if anybody, like, I feel, you know, the safest here, because literally that's the only building I've been able to walk into. Like, I'm quarantined with my mother, and like, she will not let me do anything. I think she's like terrified.
No. Of course.
Which, like, rightfully so. I'm also kind of, I'm also terrified. But so she said, though, she was like, the lady on my at my doctor's office was like, oh, you should go in the morning, like go like right when they open and avoid like all of the people. Okay, well, anyone that knows me well knows that I'm not a morning person. So your girl was not going that early in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And so like I got there about like 10:30. I had texted y'all like at work and stuff, and like I got there like 10:30, I think. And the woman said that they had so many people show up that morning that they had to lock the door and like turn people away. I was like, thank God I didn't come that early though. Like, I mean, I'm not a morning person anyway, but I also was like, I can't imagine, like, there's got to be one, a steady flow of people, if anything. And two, there can't be that many people having to get blood work done and, you know, do all that kind of stuff. Except they are a COVID 19 testing site.
Oh
yeah. So like they can take the tests, like they don't perform the test, and they don't like it's just like a drop off thing, I think, or something like that.
Right.
And so I don't know if like that was it. I'm not really sure, but I walked in there. There was literally no one in there, and everything, like, they had all the hand sanitizer and stuff and everything. It was great. And I had to go back again. I went at the same time, and there was like nobody there again. I was like, thank God. Cause I don't know what I would have done with myself. That would have been the first time I would have been around people in long time.
My friend just texted us, and she said her neighbors out in Metairie were having a crawfish boil party. And she said, there's like 8 cars outside. Do we call the police? Like, we don't feel like this is safe. That's like,
yeah, my friend called 311 on a person the other day. One of her neighbors was having a party, and she was like, literally, I just feel like there's so many things happening. Now I'm like, I get even more like, it's not anxiety, but just like feelings and emotions because of all of these like protests that are happening and like all of this kind of stuff. And it's just, I'm like, I get it. I want to open back up our city too. I want to be able to go out and everything. But like, when I don't know how something like this is going to affect me because of my immunocompromised. What are words? But I don't know how it's going to affect me. So am I, more likely to get it? Am I just as likely as you are, who's a, healthy, person and, all of that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I'm freaking terrified. So if y'all want to go, and, you know, get all the germs and shit just because you want to go back to work and you want to do this, that, and the other, like, y'all do that. I'll be in my house for the next 2 months after all y'all stupid people probably get it again.
Seriously, I was so surprised at my visceral, like, level of anxiety when I walked into the grocery store and saw all these people. And I just felt, I was like, okay, I could do this. And then after a minute, I was like, I have to go.
I know. It's like too many people. It's like, it's just, and it's so insane. And so, like, and I make joke of it just because it's, like, so terrifying. Because I'm like, oh, you know, Linda thinks I'm going to die kind of thing. But I'm like, what if I did? It's like the laugh until you cry thing.
Like, absolutely. Yes. Yes.
You know,
I'm staying home because I have friends like you. Like, that's more important to me.
Right.
Is that I take care of you and I take care of, you know.
Right. And I think that's the thing too, is that a lot of these people don't have people in their life. Luckily for them, I mean, they're not, you know, affected immediately by it. They don't have, maybe they don't have older people in their lives, or they don't have, you know, immunocompromised people in their lives. Like, that's great. That's great for you, because being old can have its issues, and being immunocompromised and having an autoimmune disease really does suck, let me tell you. So it's like,
absolutely,
you know, it's like that's great for them, but it's also like, you, that shouldn't mean that you shouldn't care about other people. And I think that's my biggest message, is like, just give a shit about other people and like that's go home. Right. Like, go home. Just stay at home, sit your ass at home. I love staying at home. I turn down plans all the time because I just want to stay at home.
Literally, the only place I go to is the grocery. And now I'm like trying to figure out how I can do that.
Totally.
Because I think people are starting to relax a little bit, and it's like, not, it's too soon.
Right. It's like, yeah, it's just, you know, it's just kind of ridiculous. And I, you know, as long as we have to do this over the phone and over a recording device, like, that's fine. We can do that. I can still tell my story and connect with people. And I've had more face-to-face interaction with some people over Zoom and FaceTime and this new app, House Party. Have you heard of this?
You told me about it, and I want to try it.
Oh, my God. It's so much fun. You can play games on it and everything. Like,
yeah.
Apparently, I read a report that they're like app downloads increased by 70% in 1 month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's insane. It's so, I think I talked about it last week, but it's like, it's so insane. But I've had more face-to-face interaction probably than I did even when we were allowed, you know, like, we could go places and be in crowds and like do stuff like that. So it's like, just take it. I'm taking it as a positive. Like, I'm connecting with people on a completely different level and a new way. And I'm learning new things about people. And, you know, like, I'm going to take it as a positive, man.
I think that's the right attitude. Like, we're here, you know.
Yeah.
We don't know for how much longer. So you might as well embrace it.
Yeah. Settle in, homie. Like, get a hobby. I'm making bread this week. Like, who am I? I don't even know. And it's like, I mean, technically I'm doing it for an article, but like, you know, still.
It counts.
Yeah. I know other people have been taking up like painting. This week I have I think, I can't remember if I said it recorded. I don't know if I said it recorded, but I think I said it to you that I got that box from this like fancy art supplies store thing. And it's like, you just tell them how much you want to pay. And then you tell them what you're interested in, and they send you, it's like a FabFitFun box kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, one of those kind of things.
Yeah.
So that's coming this week.
That's great.
Just so exciting. I'm going to do some gardening.
Yeah, I have a book coming that I want to read for this podcast.
Ooh.
Surprise.
Ooh.
So it's supposed to arrive.
Surprises.
Yeah. Tuesday it will arrive, and hopefully I don't know how long it'll take me to read it, but we'll dig in.
Well, I can't wait.
Yes.
I'm so excited.
Yes.
But yeah, so it's just like, you know, we're learning new things. We're learning new things about each other. We're learning new new hobbies.
Yes.
You know, I've cleaned my house more than, or my, you know, my bedroom at least more than I ever have before.
I don't know that I fall in that category. I have two teenagers here with me in a very small space, and the amount of dishes that I have to wash.
Totally.
Ridiculous.
That's how I feel too. I'm like, we cook so much now.
Yes.
I get a lot of takeout. Like I try to like get, you know, support the different local restaurants, but like the amount of cooking I am doing is just.
Yeah. You need to give me some restaurant recommendations, because I've been wanting to order takeout and I haven't yet, because I've been, I don't know. I'm like, how do I do it? What's the best way? What do I do?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So a lot of places, I mean, obviously we can talk about this later, unless other people want to know, and you can let us know if you want me to tell you all the places I think you should get food from. One place I will commend is, we recently, we've gotten food from Theo's Pizza and Mandina's. So Theo's and Mandina's in Theo's in Mid City is right by Mandina's, like in that area. But there's a Theo's in the suburb that shall not be named that I live in now.
Right. Yes.
Yes, there is. There's a Theo's on Veterans, and so I could order online. We didn't have to even call. Like, we ordered online, and I paid online and gave a tip online. Perfect. So we didn't have to sign anything. So literally, we just rolled up. My mom got out to go get it. Went up. They had a little. They opened the doors and they had a little table like right in front. And she didn't touch anything except when they handed her the food.
Right.
And then we like obviously wiped that off and wiped. You know, she sanitized her hands and stuff. But it was so easy. It was like in and out, done, and the food was delicious. They have so much, and I think they have their whole menu. So like, it's really, really good.
That's
and it wasn't that expensive either.
Great.
You know, for two of us to eat, and we had some leftovers too for two of us to eat. I think it was like $46 with tip. So it like wasn't even, and we got a good amount of food. So yeah, so I would definitely try them. And then Mandina is so good.
I saw that they were having takeout.
Yeah. So they have a little tent set up on the side.
Yeah.
So they come out the kitchen with it. You do have to sign, which I don't like, but we bring our own pens everywhere. So you don't have to touch me. Yeah. So we don't have to touch anything.
That's such a great tip.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rona hack. Bring your own pen.
Yes. That's so
smart. we bring our own pen everywhere. So if we do have to sign something, you know, we can just do it ourselves. So some places are still, which I wish that they would somehow figure that out. I don't really know how that works, but if we didn't have to sign something, that would be a lot easier. A lot of places don't, but there are some places that do, still require you to sign, which I think is like, I feel like we could somehow work that out.
Yeah,
like, I appreciate having to sign because it's my card. And
I don't need to sign everything. It's fine. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, but yes, if anyone would like more recommendations, reach out to me and I will gladly let you know.
And I won't
try.
I won't.
We're trying all the things.
Yeah. I won't keep talking about it, but I will. I have to say to you that I miss two things I miss the most food wise is sushi lunches. Our favorite secret Thai place.
I haven't had Thai in so long. It's so sad.
I miss our favorite Thai.
I don't even know. I'm gonna have to call them.
Yeah,
I don't think they have like a website or anything.
Yeah, you should call.
I'll have to call and see if they're open. I'm not sure.
They might be doing takeout.
That would be
if
lovely.
They are. I will do that. I will drive.
I will definitely. Yeah,
I will drive. Out there
to the suburb that must not be named.
Correct. Yeah. It's worth it.
It is worth. Yeah, that would be worth it.
Yes,
that would be definitely worth it.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
let us know. Maybe if you're lucky, we'll tell you our secret Thai place, and we won't. But
no.
You might get lucky. You never know.
Yeah.
but yeah. So let's detour from that, because I have a wild freaking ride for you today.
I'm so excited.
Just sit down, strap in your panties, put your seatbelt on, and get ready this, because it is intense.
Okay.
So it is about Vince Marinello.
Yes.
Does that ring a bell?
I remember him vaguely.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So he, Vince Marinello was extremely popular in the 80s and early 90s.
Okay.
He was a sports reporter on WDSU.
Right. Okay.
So he kind of reported for, well, he was part of WDSU since like the 60s and just as a journalist, as a different, you know, different hodgepodge of stuff, but he really had like, you know, aspirations to be the star. He wanted to be on TV. He wanted to be, you know, the hometown hero kind of thing. Mm. And finally, even though the Saints, this is when they were the famous Aints,
right.
they weren't doing so well, but it kind of worked in his favor because he became this star as the hometown boy who talked like us, who looked like us, who's from the Ninth Ward, who, you know, just all of that. And he would talk about the Saints and he, you know, even though people made fun of the Saints or that even they still might make fun of the Saints. We all love them and we're diehard and we're there until, you know, we're there until the wheels fall off kind of thing.
Always.
And so I think even though they weren't necessarily winning at that point or anything special at that point, I think having somebody that looked and sounded like us, who was like a man of the people, you know, that kind of thing, I think that's what really resonated with a lot of people. And so he became like a celebrity. And, you know, in New Orleans, like we hold all of our people to a high level. If you're from here, especially, but even if you're not, I mean, like one of those people like Scott Walker, for example, he left for a little while and still came back. I mean, he's from here, but like, you know, it's like those kind of things. Like we love a hometown.
Oh, Sally Ann.
Ooh. Sally Ann. Yeah. Oh my God. Like, you know, we just like love, we support our people. And even the ones that aren't from here, like freaking Hoda Kotb could basically be the queen of New Orleans and we would all be totally fine with that. Oh my God, I love her so much too. I can't even, I wish she was my best friend. I can't even deal with it. But so yeah, so he was just, you know, he was, he reported for more than 40 years for WDSU.
Wow. Like I had no idea.
He was a blue collar. Yeah. Like forever. He was a blue collar kind of guy, personality as big as the city, ego to match, thought he was kind of some hot shit towards the end there, like probably late 80s ish. But yeah, so he was born in the born and lived in the Ninth Ward when it was in the 30s.
Yeah.
So that used to be like a I think back then it was primarily an Italian neighborhood. He went to St. Aloysius, which then became Brother Martin.
Oh, right. Okay.
Which I mean, anyone that knows me knows the Massico family is Brother Martin through and through.
Right.
We are Brother Martin people. My grandma worked there for 30 years. So like we love some St. Aloysius, Brother Martin boys. I'm going to go ahead for the whole of Brother Martin and not claim Vince Marinello as someone we like. Just going to not claim. I feel like I can speak for everyone in that sense. Just going to not claim him. Just not pretend it didn't happen.
Yes.
So yeah, so I've been wanting to do this story for a little bit because he, you know, was popular. Then he became popular. He kind of had a resurgence after Katrina and he became like this face again during, you know, Katrina and everything that was happening during that. So he like, even though, you know, I was very, very like too young to remember him. I was like a toddler when he was, you know, on TV. I still remember him during Katrina. So he's still a name that like I knew. And then once, you know, his whole story kind of unfolded, I don't think anybody could forget.
Oh, yeah.
Forget what happened to this poor man. So, yeah. So I've been wanting to do this for a while. I did a lot of research on it, which last week I mentioned that I had this story, but I didn't want to do it yet because I wanted to make sure I kind of looked at all of it. I am in no way an expert, but I feel like I know the most now about this man.
Oh boy.
I read a couple of different articles and then Oxygen, the TV channel Oxygen, has a series called Dying to Belong.
Oh.
And it was actually, yeah, they did an episode about him on his, on the first season of the show. And they had, Jim Varney from the Times-Picayune. They have John Blancher who owns Rock and Bowl. You know, they had a couple other people on there talking about him, and it kind of like really dove in, you heard police interviews, you heard, you know, firsthand accounts of like detectives that were part of the Jefferson Parish Police Department at the time. So it was a very, very in-depth kind of look at this whole thing. And I really wanted to learn more about him as a person and his wife, who is at the center of this whole story. So, like I said, born in New Orleans, had the accent, you know, became essentially like a king around here. He, you know, he loved it. He loved, a lot of the people interviewed in different articles said he loved being the center of attention. He was very like about himself, very about, having like being able to walk into a room and have everybody know him. Like that was kind of where he was. He got free tickets to things. He got comped meals. He got, you know, all of this stuff. He could like walk into a place and everybody loved him. Like that was just, you know, that was it. So in 1993, in the early 90s, 1993 is when he left WDSU, and he left because the station actually cut their budget in half for that year. It didn't really go into why, and I couldn't really find a whole lot on why, but so they slashed their budget, and you know, in simple terms, Vince basically was like, I'm not taking a pay cut because of all of this, like I'm a star kind of thing. And they said bye, Felicia, and told him to leave. So he tried his best to kind of keep on that fame, like keep that recognition, because that's kind of like what kept his ego going and what like kind of, you know, fed him. But not being on TV made that really difficult. So he was on the radio. He was, you know, he did other kinds of things like around the city and stuff. But I mean, honestly, unless it's like a real local channel or like the, you know, what is it, WWOZ or whatever, like those kind of things, that's like the stations everyone listens to. That's the one that like plays Jazz Fest and, you know, the same themes and things like that. If you're not on those kind of channels, though, it's hard for people, I feel at least, to get a following on the radio just because they don't see your face and they don't, you know, at that time we were so used to TV and like all of that. So it was just really hard for him to kind of like hold on to that. So in this whole process, his 40-year marriage with his first wife, Andrea, ended. They apparently had gotten divorced. He was paying alimony.
Wait, how long were all they he married? Was doing now?
40 years.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Yeah. So, right. Wow. So it said 40-year marriage. Yeah, 40-year marriage with Andrea ended. And he was having to pay her alimony. He wasn't on TV anymore, so he wasn't getting his TV salary, and he also wasn't getting free shit anymore. So, like, you know, it's really easy to kind of keep your money when you're getting this big old fat paycheck and then not having to pay for anything, you know? So he was on the radio doing, and he was doing a few, like, MC appearances, but he, during this time, moved in with his mother back in the Ninth Ward, where his mother still lived, like, moved back in with his mother and was kind of just for, like, 10 years, just, like, not really, he wasn't in the spotlight. He was on the radio. He did a few things here and there, but he didn't have any money. He didn't have any fame or recognition or anything like that. So, cut to, February 2004, he is emceeing an event at a local, bowling alley. I'm just going to assume that's Rock and Bowl. Cause that was like pretty much the only bit, you know, like big, place.
It's the main one.
Yeah. It was the main one at the time. So, while he's emceeing an event, he, meets a lady who's in the crowd at the event named Liz Caruso. Okay. She's 42 at the time. And Liz is a respiratory therapist at Children's Hospital. Okay. She's in her 40s, respiratory therapist at Children's Hospital. And she just got out of like a really bad marriage. So remember that part, because that will come to play later. So, she, you know, was kind of, you know, not really like looking for anything, but also like wasn't used to, you know, a good man, essentially. So she meets Vince, and he is charming. He puts on, like, you know, the whole the whole facade of, like, you know, this gentleman, charming and all, you know, like, full of life, full of energy, all of that. He doted on her. He would send her flowers. He would send her presents and, like, all of that.
And how old is he? Liz, like, in his 60s at this time? Okay.
Yes. So he's, like, in his 60s at this time. So that was one of the reasons. So even though all of his friends and everybody, Liz was well-liked. She had a lot of friends. His friends respected her. Like, she fit into his world, like, really, really well. But everyone was kind of like, that's a little nasty because he could be your father, essentially.
Yeah.
Right. So love bloomed, and eventually they got married. So they met in February of 2004. Their first date was on Valentine's Day, and they were married in October 2004. Okay.
That's very quick.
Right. Wow. Very quick. Quick. Yeah. So even though, they were interviewing a couple of people in this show that I was watching, and they said, you know, even though people kind of looked at Vince like, oh, you know, your career has kind of faded a little bit, but at least you found a new wife. You're in love. You've got this, like, you know, new chapter happening for you. So that's October 2004. Cut to August 2005. Oh, Hurricane Katrina hits New Orleans. Yeah. And, you know, changed everything. Thousands of people died. Neighborhoods underwater. You know, like, nobody really knew how to get life back on track. We didn't know what was happening. Nothing. It was chaos. It was pure chaos. Vince, though, you know, he kind of saw an opportunity here. He hit the radio airwaves and just reported on the latest news. So I think it was kind of one of those things where, like, this person you've heard and trusted is now in the middle of New Orleans and talking about it and letting you know what's happening. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he wanted to do his job. He was, after all, a journalist. And so he wanted to report on what was happening in the news and all of that. And he kind of, his career kind of took a second life because he became somebody. I mean, you know, at that point we were all, like, grasping for any sign of hope and any sign of, you know, anything. So I think having this man who we all trusted before, you know, he was the voice, like a saint's voice. He was on the news forever, and, you know, like, years and years. And so I think he kind of made everybody, like, feel comfortable, which is, like, that's the first sign of, you know, some shit's happening.
Yeah.
So, and he was, you know, he was lapping it up because everybody knew him again. Everybody here, they heard him on the radio. He was interviewed a lot. He was, you know, all of that. And he essentially, it looked like he was enjoying a lavish lifestyle again. So he was back on the radio and the news, and Liz was always having, like, a bunch of presents, and, like, he was buying stuff. They had a new house, they had new cars, all of that kind of stuff. So that is in 2005. About a year later, in 2006, specifically August 31st, 2006, Liz is 45 at this time. Liz is leaving a doctor's office on Metairie Road.
Okay.
And suddenly she is shot twice in the head. Someone comes out of nowhere. And nobody can identify. Someone just comes out of nowhere. Everyone sees this lady. They heard the gunshots, and everyone sees this lady in the parking lot at Metairie Towers, like, dead on the floor, on the ground. Right. So totally out of the blue. No one's really understanding, like, what the fuck is happening. She's rushed to the hospital. And at that time, police are trying to notify Vince of what's happened. I mean, his wife just got gunned down randomly in the middle of a parking lot at, like, 3 or 4 in the afternoon,
On
Metairie Road, of all places. So she was coming, poor girl, she's coming out of a therapy appointment. I was like, come on, Jesus. Like, she just went to therapy. She was probably feeling a little bit better, you know, like, so basically after this, she's on her way to the hospital. No one can find Vince. So everyone's like, well, we don't know what the fuck's happening. Was she targeted? Was this random? Is Vince in trouble? Like, is should somebody worry about Vince? Like, where is he? Not answering the phone, nothing. While this is happening, so obviously, if anyone has watched the first 48 on A&E, which is such a good show, holy shit. Everyone knows that like the first 48 hours is crucial for trying to find whoever committed a murder. Well, committed a crime. At this point, she was still alive. So,
okay.
Yes. She did not die at the scene. She in fact died the next morning at about 2 a.m. She had a couple of surgeries, but they just couldn't stop the blood and the injuries were too much. So she, I believe it was, or maybe a day, and I'm not really sure the timing, but it was 2 a.m. I believe it was either September 1st or 2nd.
Very sad.
She passed. Yeah. So it must have been the next day because they still couldn't. No. It had to be the second because they said for like 24 hours, no one knew where Vince was. Like no one could get in touch with him. No one had any idea where he was. And he missed, like he did not see his wife at the hospital. Yeah. Like he did not, like she died at the hospital from her injuries. So the police start working on this. They realize she shot twice in the face by a 38 caliber pistol. I know nothing about guns. So that essentially meant nothing to me. But a 38 caliber.
Is that a thing?
A 38. I have no idea. I don't, you could tell me that was a thing and I'd have been like, sure, that sounds right. I know nothing. I have shot a gun once in my life and it was terrifying and I was the one with the gun and it was still terrifying.
Okay. Okay. 38.
Sorry. Okay. 38 caliber pistol. Also is important. So remember that. So obviously they had 911 calls. It's freaking Metairie Road. Anyone not from here.
Yeah.
Metairie is the more affluent suburb of New Orleans, especially Old Metairie, which is where this event took place. We have a very lovely street called Metairie Road, and it's great. It's got shops, it's got restaurants, it has a couple of schools, all of that, a couple of churches, all that kind of thing. Like very, very family suburban, but family oriented suburban, but also there's a lot of money, there's, you know, a lot of big houses and fancy cars and like all of that kind of stuff. So when something like this happens, especially in that area, like the police were all over it. And then on top of that, the sheriff at the time, who Sheriff Harry Lee, and Sheriff Harry Lee was a very, very famous, well-known figure.
Yes, like most people,
because
don't know,
mainly because of his size.
Don't know their local sheriff. Everybody knew Harry Lee. Yes.
Oh, everyone knew Harry Lee. Single person in the world knew Harry Lee. Like I think even out, like well outside of Jefferson Parish, like everyone
wasn't
knew
he
Harry
on
Lee
that
was,
show
he was
with just Steven Seagal where they were shooting nutrients?
Yes, he was. Yes, so Steven Seagal dabbled in police work with the Jefferson Parish Police Department.
I think he's a honorary deputy.
He is an honorary deputy, and that terrifies me on many levels.
Anyway, yeah,
terrifies me just as much as me having a gun should terrify everyone. That piece of information should terrify everyone. So Harry Lee, I mean, personally, I think he was adorable. He was like this older man, kind of on the hefty side, not kind of, definitely on the hefty
wore
side.
Wore a white cowboy hat,
yes. And you know, just all around a character, like a freaking character. But like everyone respected him, everyone loved him, like, you know. So of course Vince Marinello and Harry Lee are friends, so of everyone's course, on it, all the detectives, like, you know, all that kind of thing. A 911 call said that someone saw a man on a bike try to take her purse and shot her in the face while trying to take her purse. So according to this call, this guy on a bike rolls up to her, walks up to whatever. There's a bike involved, but bikes up to her.
Wheels
up to her. Wheels up to her, yeah. So a 911 call says a man on a bike tries to take her purse and ends up shooting her in the face.
Awful.
So Harry Lee basically says, you know, it's a robbery gone bad. Like, that's what it is. So somebody was trying to rob her, and that was it. Well, luckily for Liz and her family and everyone involved, Some investigators on the case didn't take that. They were like, we respect you, but respectfully, no, that's not
Who's
what happened.
Always the first suspect.
Obviously, have you watched a fucking Dateline? Has Keith Morrison taught you people exactly. Nothing. Right. So but they didn't think that because her purse, her car, and her wallet were all still on her person. Oh. So, like, if it was a robbery, what the fuck were they there to take? Like, they didn't take anything. And if you're going to shoot her in the face, I think that gives you a little bit more time to, like, take whatever the fuck you're there for. Like, so nothing was gone. Nothing was gone from her. Her purse, literally, they show crime scene photos on the show I was watching, and you see it. Like, there's the pool of blood where she was, and her purse is laying right next to her.
Also,
like, it doesn't look, like, rifled through. It doesn't, shit's not all on the ground. Like, everything's intact, and everything's in her purse.
Doesn't it seem like, very intimate to shoot someone in the face? Like, you know what I mean?
100%. Like, that's, 100%.
An angry move.
Right. And usually, I mean, like, yes, robbers usually do, if you're robbing something, you usually do have a gun. Like, that is more of, like, the MO of a robber. But a robber is not going to close range shoot someone like that. Like, that's not typically, that's not the typical, just, you know, outline of a robbery killer kind of thing. And also, robberies don't always end in murder. Like, that's not, like, the goal of the person.
Right.
Can you tell I watch a lot of crime shows? But that's not the goal. That's not their ultimate goal. Like, that's not their end goal. Like, their goal is to steal whatever they're trying
to
steal.
Money.
Or, you know, exactly. So the fact that not only was nothing taken, she was shot very close and in the head. Yeah. Twice in the face and in the head.
Awful.
Like, that's just that it's very intimate and it's very personal and it was not a it never read as a random act. And I think a lot of investigators on the case and detectives on the case were like, this does not you know, this doesn't add up. It just is not great. So a bunch of witnesses were in the area. Going back to, like, the Metairie Road thing, Metairie Road is always busy.
Constantly.
Like, the fact that a lot of, I have a few eyewitness, like, accounts that I'm going to talk about, but the fact that more people didn't see this happen is kind of shocking to me. It was in a parking lot, like, behind a building, so it wasn't exactly, like, on Metairie Road itself. It was kind of away from that, but still, it's like, that is such a high trafficked area that it baffles me that more people didn't see this. And it was like 4:30 in the afternoon.
Isn't there a school nearby or something?
So there's a school, like, right in the vicinity of that. Obviously, school doesn't end. Well, that's the other thing. It's like, I would have been terrified if I found out somebody just got, like, shot there, because if my kid was at the school, or, like, you know, somebody you knew was at the school, I mean, that's terrifying. You know, schools go on lockdown for that. Luckily, it was about 4:30, so I think school would have been out by this point, but still would have been a high trafficked area. A lot of the time, right when you're going down Metairie Road at the most inopportune moment, there's train tracks on Metairie Road, and the train always comes at, like, the worst time. So there's always people there waiting for the train to pass by. So it's like, a lot of it was just, like, crazy that not a whole lot of people saw this. But so they talk about, 2 911 calls and a eyewitness account. So a couple of witnesses gave a description of a guy that they saw in the area on a bike. And he looked like this. They called him a vagrant. It was this guy that was asking people for money. Essentially, a man that had frequented the area, asking people for money. One person calls him a kook. It was a guy, he had a beard, straggly hair, hat, and old clothes. And so a couple of people saw this person in the area. They suspected it was a homeless person that they had known, that different people had known. They actually went to find him at his boarding house that he lived at, close to the scene. But the kicker of this was, they have surveillance video from the Metairie Towers that she was in. And this man did not fit the body type that they have of the gunman on. Because they have a video. Like, they have the gunman on video.
Oh, wow.
It didn't fit the description of that.
The gunman didn't account for surveillance equipment.
Apparently, the gunman did not think that... Now, you can't see the person's face in the video. They also have, like, a beard and a cap on. So, it's, like, you can't see any facial things, but you can see a whole body outline. So, like, you can tell, like, you know, like, this, you know, if one man looks like The Rock and then another man is, like, you know, what, at McLovin kind of thing. Like, you're going to know they're not the same person. I love McLovin. But you get what I mean. You know they're not the same person kind of thing. So, the body types didn't match. And,
Sorry.
That image in my head, no. So, I mean, it's a funny image.
Okay.
So, another witness comes forward and says she calls in like a day later after they put the newspapers had and the news had some details about the suspect. A witness calls the police station and says a man on a bike passed in front of her, in front of her car while she was at a stop sign. And she watched him get into a white Ford Taurus and he put his bike in the trunk of this Ford Taurus and drove away like very soon after she like this woman also heard the gunshots and very soon after that saw this man drive bike past her, put his bike in the trunk of a white Ford Taurus and then drove away. Wow. So she did not, unfortunately, though, write the license plate number. And like one of the detectives on the show said, like, everybody, you know, there's got to be countless white Ford Taurus.
Oh, my God.
You know, apparently it was a very popular car and kind of thing. So, yeah. So 24 hours after Liz gets gunned down, Vince turns up at the police station. He says he was in Jackson, Mississippi, watching the Saints game. Oh, no, he did not turn up yet. They got him on the phone. So 24 hours after she's gunned down, they get Vince on the phone. And he says he's in Jackson, Mississippi. He came there to watch the Saints game the night before. And he'll come back as soon as he
can. Why would you go to Jackson, Mississippi to watch a Saints game?
He was at a friend. He was at friends' houses. Some friend
viewing party at a friend's.
Yes. Yeah. He was with people. He was with people at a house in Jackson, Mississippi.
Allegedly.
So, allegedly. Right. And he says, but I love, he says he'll come back as soon as he can.
Your wife was just shot in the face.
Exactly. Like your wife was shot in like point blank shot in cold blood, like just in the middle on a random day. On Metairie Road. Like that does not just happen all the time. And as a journalist, I was like, shouldn't you be more disturbed by this?
Yes. As a journalist, a husband,
as a husband, whatever, a journalist, right. A person,
a human being,
a person in general, a human person.
I'll be there. Right. I don't know. Maybe I can later.
Eventually. I'll eventually be there. So, a couple of Vince's friends though, did say that he was devastated after her death. And honestly, so was everyone else. And everyone, I think, was more shocked by her death than anything. Yeah. Because, again, that just does not happen on Metairie Road in Old Metairie. Like, it just doesn't
It's terrifying.
Happen. Right. So now it's a murder investigation. So obviously, you know, investigators are taking it more seriously because Liz has passed. And now it's, you know, the ante has been upped, essentially. They report that no shell casings were found at the scene, but a specific type of bullet was found in Liz's skull. And they found out that this specific type of bullet, there was something about like a wax coating on it or something like that. And part of it was blue. And so they discovered, though, that the manufacturer of this specific bullet discontinued the bullet, so it should have been, they were kind of like, oh, this is a good lead because not a lot of people are gonna have these bullets because they were discontinued a while ago, and like they're just not, you know, I think like randomly people had them probably at gun shops and stuff, but it wasn't like mass produced, so it would have been easier to find easier to trace, okay. essentially. As this is going on, many of Liz's family and friends and like some other people that knew her were pointing the finger at Liz's ex-husband, Peter.
Oh,
so okay. Peter.
It's not even.
I know. Okay. So Peter Caruso was at the top of the list, essentially, because Peter and Liz had a daughter. And so Peter was fighting Liz for custody.
Okay, that's sad.
Mm-hmm. And in the weeks before her death, he had left a bunch of threatening voicemails and had accused Liz of abusing their child.
Oh my God, this poor woman.
And just all of this. God. I know. Like, this poor freaking woman. Just, like, so many things. So this, like, she's already dealing with she dealt with a nasty marriage, a nasty divorce, and now she's, like, dealing this guy with this, like, psycho guy that's, you know, that's trying to get her child, essentially. Goodness. So, however, Peter has a solid alibi. Apparently, he worked for a local lawyer and was taking a deposition. Okay. And it would have been hard for him to get down to the location, put on a disguise, commit the crime, then get back to wherever he was supposed to be. So they kind of quickly, like, I'm sure they didn't rule him out, but his alibi was pretty locked down. Right. So I think it would have been very difficult. But anyone that has watched a Dateline episode knows that you could easily pay someone to kill someone for you. Sure. So, like, I'm sure that he wasn't out of the woods yet. In this time, Vince eventually shows up back from Mississippi, and he goes to the police station to, obviously, they are going to want to question him and talk to him. He goes to the police station. However, he shows up with a lawyer in tow.
Odd.
Right. So, if you are not guilty of something and your wife just died in a tragic way,
a suspected,
why would you show up with a lawyer?
Someone was supposedly mugging her. So why would you show up with it?
So why would you show up with a lawyer? Very crazy. So this part, hold on to your panties, because this part got me. I did not see this coming. Okay, so pre-stuff. So obviously they start to interview him because, again, what have we all learned from these cop shows? It's always obviously the significant other, wife or husband.
Yes.
And they started, and as they're talking about Liz, they say something, your wife. And Vince stops them and says, my ex-wife.
What?
So everyone's like, what? I'm sorry. Like, ears, you know, like dog ears go up, like, huh? Like,
what?
Say that one more time. And new, essentially, like, as they keep talking, these new, crazy, random, strange details start coming out about his marriage. So apparently, his marriage was troubled both personally and financially. And it comes out that he actually was not living the lavish life of luxury that he had lived before. He did not get back up to that level after Katrina. It wasn't lucrative for him, and he didn't get the money that I think he was, like, probably showing that he did. Like, he was probably, you know, showing off, and he was buying Liz, like, all these gifts and shit like that. So, you know, it was just kind of crazy. So Liz ends up kicking him out. And he moves back in with his mother.
Again.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Right.
Okay. So his poor mom is like. Okay.
His poor mother. But then, so one of the people comments and says, they have been having problems for a long time. I'm sorry. 2006 that she dies. You got married literally 2 years before that in 2004. So I'm like, when did things get bad? Like, right away? I mean, Jesus, wasn't there a honeymoon period or something?
Seriously. Like,
what the hell? So,
I don't know.
When they said that, I was like, wait. They've only been married for like
a year and
2 years at this point. Like, not even 2 years yet.
So
Vince then claims that Liz was unfaithful to him and he felt betrayed by her.
Okay.
But Vince actually was the one doing the betraying and the lying because, kicker, he was not exactly fully divorced from his first wife when he and Liz got married.
Wait, what?
Uh-huh. Yep. Oh. Just take that in for a second.
Okay. Wait.
Take it in.
Wait.
Right.
Wow.
So he was still married to his first, even though he was separated from her. They never actually got divorced. Oh. And he was still, like, paying for her life style. Wow. Like, paying for her shit. So it wasn't alimony. It was, like, he was paying for his wife's life, stuff. Essentially.
Yeah. Oh, my right. God.
Right. So he was married to two women at the same time.
Okay.
And he said he did not tell Liz that he was still married.
Okay.
Right. So I was like, what the fuck is happening?
Whoa.
They interviewed Jim Varney from the Times Pick.
Oh my God.
And after they share that, he says everyone in New Orleans just about fell out of their seats. I was like, well, I definitely did.
This
so
guy, like,
I don't even,
he really
I know.
Thinks a lot of himself.
This motherfucker.
Oh my God.
So not only was he still married, he was separated from her for a long time, but not only was he still technically married, legally married to her, he was taking some of Liz's money that she brought into their marriage to help pay for his ex-wife's life.
Oh, shit.
Right. And so she wasn't happy, obviously.
Of course not. Yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean, I think that's, like, obviously.
Oh, my God.
Right. Right. So Liz, though, did not have to technically file for divorce because, again, their marriage was not legal.
It wasn't a marriage, right.
Oh. Right. But it came out that Liz had actually threatened to out Vince to the public for being a liar and a bigamist.
Oh, okay.
Right. And Vince being the narcissist and the ego, you know, more ego, you know, egotistical kind of person, obviously did not want that to happen.
Instead of doing the right thing. Yes.
Exactly. Because your obviously your reputation and being popular in your city is way more important than anything else. You know, he was worried that all of this coming out, him being not only was he technically a bigamist, he was now financially in ruin and he was living with his mother.
Oh my goodness. So oh my God.
So all of this, like, could you imagine being the police officer that, like, the investigator doing this and, like, listening to this man just tell you, like, basically he's a bigamist, he doesn't actually have money, and he lives with his mother in a FEMA trailer? It's like,
I can't like, imagine. No.
Blew my mind. It blew my mind.
Oh, my God.
So.
Oh, my God.
In this, though, this revelation of facts, he does say that he does not know who shot her and he did not shoot her because he was in Jackson, Mississippi at 6:30.
Right. Of course. Right.
Obviously, though, you have to look into an alibi. And when the detectives looked into his alibi a little bit, you know, a little bit with a fine tooth comb.
Right.
His friends, whose house he was at in Mississippi, said he did visit them and he was there, but he didn't arrive when Vince told the police he did. He arrived around 7:30. And apparently Jackson like a 3-hour drive or something?
It's like 4-ish, 5 hours. Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. So basically they were saying like it would have taken him. They said it was a 3-hour drive, like, wherever he was going.
Yeah. It's like 4 hours. Yeah,
So Liz was shot at 4:30, and he arrived in Jackson around 7:30. They said around 7:30.
That's totally possible. You drive real fast,
right?
You can do that.
However, his cell phone pinged off of a tower near the crime scene later that afternoon.
Dumbass.
Right. So in my notes, I put, has no one seen an episode of Cold Justice?
Exactly.
They always fucking catch you with a cell phone.
Yeah.
Are you a fucking idiot?
Right.
Are you an idiot?
Right.
Like, for anyone that doesn't know, when you use your cell phone for anything, it pings off of a cell phone tower.
Right.
And they can track what you're doing. Like, people can tell. They literally have forensic people that do solely this. Look at cell phone data. And they can pinpoint where you were in a given time frame because of your cell phone activity,
right.
Because of it has to ping off of somewhere. Like the signal has to come from somewhere.
Oh my God.
So they can tell where you are when this is happening. So,
well, obviously, he was in his 60s. He didn't know.
True. Boomer.
Yeah. Okay, boomer. Exactly. So even though there's a lot of circumstantial evidence. So again, if you've seen Cold Justice, Kelly Sigler says you can win a case on circumstantial evidence, but you have to have like the one clincher. Like you have to have something that like kind of pushes that over the edge.
Right. Okay.
So even though now they did mention though that in early 2000s, this cell phone technology was not what it is today. Like it's not as you know, forensically, whatever, but I would think that it would have to be, I mean, I would assume that it would have to be a little bit more simple though, than it would be now because I'm not sure. I don't know how that works, but apparently they put his cell phone in the vicinity of where she was murdered around the time she was murdered.
Right.
So, of course the defense was like, it could have pinged off of the tower because he was in another place and blah, 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 you know, like all of that stuff.
No, that's,
but I'm like, that's too much of a coincidence to whatever. So after that, after they see that, they go around to local gun shops and a gun shop owner who they interviewed, they interviewed him as an acquaintance of Vince's. So I think Vince used to like, I don't know if he had a lot of guns or whatever, but he used to like frequent this shop. And he said that Vince came in one day and said that he had a gun but didn't have any bullets. And because of the, you know, crime kind of ramped up after Katrina.
Yes, a lot of people.
And because of that, he wanted, a lot of people wanted to protect themselves because the whole city was like, was, you know, crazy. Madness, so, right. So perfectly normal, you know, like he said that he had a gun but didn't have any bullets. And because of all of the crime at the time, he wanted to be able to protect himself. However, the bullets he ended up buying this last time he went to this gun shop were the same very specific bullets that killed Liz.
Okay.
The same bullets, same exact bullets. So
that's pretty.
Right. Once they hear this, you know, they find out about the bullets and all of that, they secure a search warrant for Vince's FEMA trailer. And this gets into
just the fact that you said
what everybody Vince's heard about.
FEMA trailer right there just brings me back. Oh my God.
Right. Just flashbacks to Katrina, okay, for sure.
So, oh God.
So this is where it gets into more of everything that was reported from the news media journalists and, you know, the newspapers at the time and all of that. So they show up to Vince's house, FEMA trailer, and they find out that it's FEMA trailer. It's not a house. Yeah. A FEMA trailer.
Oh,
and they find out that, surprise, surprise, Vince has a white Ford Taurus, just like the one seen at the crime scene. Right. And on the drive, they test the car, and on the driver's side handle, they find gunpowder residue.
Oh my goodness! Okay,
right. So it's just like, Vince, things are not looking good for you.
Mm-mm.
Inside the trailer is where they find the very famous 4-point to-do list in his kitchen. The list read like a checklist and said, "Buy gloves, buy mustache, buy sunglasses, etc." The same disguise. Everything was the same disguise that matched the one seen on the man in the surveillance videos and the person that everyone saw riding around. The witnesses saw.
Okay, so wait. He basically wrote a note to himself that said, "I did this crime."
Yes. Essentially. Yeah. So he basically, it literally said, like, buy gun, buy bullets. Buy it, the disguise,
murder,
buy sunglasses, buy this, buy that. Then the kicker was, it also said repaint bike and throw gun. Hold on. This was my favorite. Throw gun in river on the way to mama's. Come on, bud.
Okay.
Come on.
Oh my God.
So if this wasn't enough,
why would you write that down?
Well, the funny part is a couple of people, that they interviewed, they were like, he missed a really crucial part to that to-do list, which was throw the to-do list away.
Oh my God. Burn the to-do list.
Burn to-do list, you fucking
what
idiot.
What is wrong with you?
You fucking idiot. God. Watch an episode of Law and Order. Like,
why would you have to write that down?
So hold. So that will come back. So exactly a week after Liz's death, Vince was arrested for murder. Okay. And then his mugshot comes out. And I have seen this mugshot before, but I did not put these two things together until they mentioned it in the episode about it. It comes out and he was bald, even though he was seen always with a full head of hair.
Oh, even better.
I know. He wears a fucking toupee.
Come on.
And it's not even a toupee. It's like a full-on wig because the sides of his hair were white, white, white. And the hair that he had normally was this like dusty, dark, like gray, like salt and pepper kind of situation. And like wavy kind of shit. Right. Like, I was like, what the fuck? What the actual fuck?
Oh my God.
And I remember seeing that mugshot on TV. Like I fully remember that happening, but I just like did not put together that I have seen him before with a full head of hair. God. Like
oh my God.
He looked ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
It was too much. too much. So a few months after that, he's released on bond. And he's out on bond until the murder trial begins December 2nd, 2008.
Oh, boy. So,
they interview, like I said before, they interview John Blanger, the guy that owns Rock and Bowl. And he said, he goes, it was so bizarre and so foolish. Oh, I was like, God. John, we know, homie, we fucking know. So the defense tries to bring back, the prosecutors laid out all of the evidence that they had and everything that very, very straightforward pointed at Vince, like totally. But the defense tried to bring back that, bring back the first husband as the suspect. And the attorney, And the attorneys also pointed out like their lack of physical evidence, like that tied him to the scene. There was nothing at the scene.
There's a to-do list.
I know. Wait. So, his defense, one of his defense attorneys says that obviously he was in Mississippi and the list that he made. He obviously, it was just him doing his job as a journalist. It was part of his list of questions that he may want to ask the sheriff about the person that murdered his wife.
And no.
I wrote in capital letters, if he's a journalist, he knows that no one is going to let him near that because he's a suspect. He's not going to be able to ask the sheriff any fucking thing. He's not a journalist at this point. He's a husband who's a suspect in a murder investigation. Like, no. So that the fact that the man said it with a straight face baffled me because I'm that's stupid. That they're not going to let they don't let anyone that has any personal connection to a case investigate a case because it becomes it becomes biased. Like it's not that you can't
like maybe argue like he had like a mental break or something, but
that he was a journalist?
No.
I was like, dear God. So and also this whole time I was like, I don't think you hired the right defense attorney.
No.
Because then they let this motherfucker take the stand at his own trial.
Oh my God.
Which is his constitutional right to do.
Sure.
He can
of course.
100% do that give his own, testify for himself kind of thing. But everyone said Vince got up there and it was Vince, the performer and the entertainer is who got up there. He did not help himself in any way because he made it all about him instead of making it about Liz, which is like, if you're trying to find, trying to say, I did not murder this person.
Yeah.
This is why, this is whatever. Wouldn't you talk more about, less about yourself and more about the person who you're accused of hurting in any way.
No.
So he was not convincing at all. He was not, it was the wrong, wrong fucking move.
Yeah.
So a couple of days later, so it starts on December 2nd, and on December 13th, 2008, the jury comes back with their verdict. And it took them 90 minutes to come to their decision, which that is just not a good sign. Not a good sign. And he was found guilty for the murder of Liz. And because of the type of murder he was found guilty for, that comes with a sentence in Louisiana that comes with a sentence of automatic life in prison.
Okay.
Without the possibility of parole, I believe. Yeah. Also, I will note that the defense did get this trial moved to Lafayette because, So the whole thing was there wouldn't be an impartial jury member because everybody in the greater New Orleans area knew who Vince Marinello was.
Right.
Knew him well. Some people were, you know, like a lot of people were friendly with him and there was no way he was going to get a fair trial. So they actually moved this whole thing to Lafayette. So the jury was from Lafayette, the judge was from Lafayette, like all everything was moved out of out of the city. So which is also saying it's like it, that's also saying something. I say that because it's also saying something to the fact that it only took them 90 minutes because it's you know, it's one thing if like we all know him and we all think you're a fucking asshole.
Yeah,
you did this, and then like it takes us an hour as a jury of New Orleanians to come to that conclusion. But the fact that it was people who essentially didn't really know him and know who he was heard this, and it took them 90 minutes to fully come to an agreement of that he was guilty.
That's crazy. So,
yeah, so he spent his life in prison. I know for a while he was in Angola. I don't know if he is still in, if he was still in Angola, I up until his death. And the reason why I wanted to do this, for the podcast is because he actually just passed away in February. So a lot of the story got brought back up. A lot of things were rehashed and, up until his death, he stayed with his, innocent plea.
Really?
Yeah. He pleaded innocent. So the evidence, though, obviously was overwhelming against him. And essentially, New Orleanians kind of turned on him. I mean, I think he went from being the golden boy to somebody that had, because of his vanity and because of his lies and ego, he shot a woman in the face.
I just can't even, like, I feel so bad for her family.
So bad. And her daughter, like, she had a young daughter at the time that was under the age of being an adult because she was fighting for custody. So this poor, she has a daughter. And so it was like this poor girl grows up without her mother.
Right.
Because this man lied to her, became a bigamist, and then got into financial ruin, you know, all because of his pride and his ego.
Right.
So, John Blanchard with Rock and Bowl ended, he was towards the end of the episode. And he said, "I think everyone has forgotten about him. And I haven't heard anyone say that they miss Vince. It's more like, quote, Vince Marinello, what a loser."
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
You know, so it, I mean, it's just, it's crazy. It's, I mean, it's insane how it's someone
like,
can just not care so much, can care so much about themselves and so little about someone else that you're willing to devise this plan to shoot someone in the face.
Well, and feel like so brazen, like in the middle of the day.
Right.
In the middle of this, you know, family, neighborhood, kids around, people around, and feel like you can get away with it.
100%.
Because you're you and you're, what, a badass? I don't know. Like
Right. Because you're you. What's wrong with you? I mean, I bet he probably thought, oh, well, this is Jefferson Parish. Harry Lee's not going to let anything happen to me. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, if I would have been Harry Lee at that time, I would have felt like such an asshole. Like, what an idiot. Just, you know, you try, like,
terrible. Yeah.
Oh, it's just awful. When I read about, like, he wrote that list because he wanted questions to ask the investigators. I was like, okay, OJ.
Yeah,
writing
right.
a book about, like, I didn't do it, but if I did do it, this is how I would have done it.
If
like,
I did it, right.
Exactly. Are you a fucking idiot? Like, I just, it's sad. It's shocking. It's like, you know, I just think.
You know, and if he had, like, later been, like, not apologize, that's not the right word, but had
admitted.
Admitted. And had, I don't know. But to go to his grave still saying, I didn't do anything.
Yep.
Just, that's terrible.
Yeah. So he died. I believe he was, he was in his 80s when he passed. And I don't, I did not find anything that specifically said how he passed, but I do know that he was having health problems, at the end of last year.
Yeah.
So I think it was just complications with, you know, I mean, he was old, he was in his 80s, but
yeah.
I mean, this poor woman, 45 years old, has a young daughter, gets gunned down all because you made a mistake. You got married when you were already married.
Yeah.
And you stole money from her and you did this. And it's like, I think too, like my uncle, so like I have uncles now that are in their 60s. Mm-hmm. And I just think I'm like, they would they could never, the thought of like somebody their age coming up with this plan.
Oh my God.
And it's not like they're old and decrepit, but I'm just thinking like somebody coming up with this plan of like, let me ride a bike,
exactly.
let me wait outside,
right?
Let me shoot somebody in the face. Ugh. And then get back on my bike, go find my car. Like, right. I mean, and it's also like sad too. Cause it's like, how desperate must you have been to hold on to this little bit of limelight that you thought you had.
Right.
And willing to sacrifice somebody else's life to keep on you. And it was like, dude, you weren't even that famous at the time. You became more famous because you killed your wife.
Yeah.
Like, that's why you were famous.
Well,
I don't think anyone really is going to, like, people are going to be like, oh, that Saints guy. But didn't he kill his wife? Like, it's no one's ever going to associate him with anything else. And so it's like the one thing that he didn't want to happen was have his fame die out, you know, and his celebrity go away. But now he's famous for, like, the worst possible thing that you could be famous for.
Yeah.
Not famous, but like, you know, be known for.
And, you know, having his, like, you know, like you've already mentioned, the vanity with the wig and all that, like, totally exposed and like, look what you did to yourself. Like,
right.
You know, it didn't have to be like that. Like,
no. If you just, like, that's the thing too. A lot of these things I watch, like, you know, I always joke about like the Dateline and stuff, but it's a lot of them. I'm like, just get a divorce.
Right.
Just like, there's so many other options.
Right.
I mean, a lot of it has to do, you know, a lot of those Dateline shows and stuff. It's like all about a life insurance policy or like, you know, whatever. It's about usually about money. But like a lot of the time, if you know, most of the time it's like they had an affair.
Mm.
And they wanted to go off with this other person. It's like, then fucking go off with this other person.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I just don't understand. Like, and obviously I'm not the kind of person that would kill someone, thankfully. But, like, I just, like, can't. Like, my brain doesn't comprehend.
No, it's not like,
doing that to some, like, being like that.
Right.
Oh. To somebody that's not. It's one thing if that person is, like, beating the fuck out of you.
Right.
And is a horrible person.
Self-defense,
and, like.
Right.
Like, you know, it was self-defense. They were attacking you. That's completely different. It's when you kill somebody that's totally innocent and has done nothing but maybe, like, threatened your way of life in some way, like Liz threatened Vince's way of life and his fame and how he was perceived by people, even though he was not living the lavish life he was putting out there.
Right.
But it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy.
It is like, crazy that when does that jump happen in someone's mind be like, oh, I know what I'll do. I will.
Right.
Take a bike and put on a mustache and I'm like, what the fuck?
Like, what the fuck? Like,
I mean,
and I think it's luckily, and I'm glad to know this because I love you a lot. And I'm glad to know that you don't understand it either because I hope you wouldn't murder someone. Though I would be right there for your Dateline episode, bitch.
You know it.
But it's just like, yeah, like at what point, when does it switch? Like, when does it right. flip one more and you're over the line?
Like, and you're like, this is a great idea. Such a good idea.
Right. I'm a freaking genius. Genius. Like, I don't understand how people
right.
don't think I'm a genius because right. I'm so smart. Obviously, and they always yeah. think that they're so much smarter than like the police everyone else.
I'll never see this note that I left for myself.
And then he couldn't not let them in, but like I saw the photos from them serving the warrant to search his house. And I like, you know, you see all of the cars. There's like a hullabaloo outside this fucking FEMA trailer. You didn't think maybe like, oh, maybe they won't search me, so let me like eat the paper or something.
Flush it down the toilet.
Flush it down the toilet. I don't know. Like they're coming, put it down the garbage disposal, yeah. like something. You had to have heard all of these fuckers pull up.
Exactly.
And you just left it on the counter like nothing. Like they were going to believe that you were just being a journalist and coming up with questions.
Sorry, but I'm
not a journalist. I'm a lifestyle writer. But when I come up with questions for someone I'm interviewing, it doesn't show up like a checklist. Like I don't sit there and think, name, check. Like, yeah, like I don't think like, you know, it's not in bullet points like that. It's in a sentence. It's in a thought. It's in a fully thought out thing. Maybe not a full sentence or a complete sentence, but I'm like, it's not a fucking checklist. Like, it's not.
You don't like, write on your checklist, throw gun in the river on the way back to mama's?
On the way to mama's. Oh, mama's could have been a R, Ashley. You don't know.
That is the craziest.
It's bananas. Like it was so. I knew like a little bit of the stuff. Like he had part of the costume and he had like all of that, but everything else that was involved, I'm like, you're a fucking idiot. Like you clearly didn't think this plan out very, very far because it got as far as the checklist and that's as far as he went with the planning process.
I'm so disappointed that he was able to execute this plan. Like, you know what I mean?
I know. Like, I know. You would think that someone like so stupid to like have a plan laid out like that in such a stupid way. It is very upsetting that he was able to get away with it. You know, like it was... It's very, I mean, it, yeah, it's like very disheartening and upsetting because it's like if you just thought if anybody would have like said anything about like it being weird that he did X, Y, and Z or he, you know, did this and that and like, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Like if one person would have just questioned it. Maybe, you know, like maybe shoot. I don't know. You can't really. You can't really think about it like that because things happen for a reason and they happen in the way that they're supposed to. But it's just like such an idiotic execution.
Right.
That's probably not the best choice of words. But like,
I know what you mean. Yeah.
You know, such an idiot way of doing something and it is successful. I mean, you didn't get away with it, but it still was successful in its purpose.
Correct.
And so, and then it like, that was the other thing. And then it came out anyway. All of this shit came out anyway because he offered that information up to the detectives. Ugh. So I'm like, well, you're a fucking idiot because if you're going to sit there and you're going to murder this woman over this piece of information, and then you're going to show up at the police station and just give that information out to everyone. What the fuck was the point of killing her?
Right.
You're just going to give that to people because you were recorded. They have to tell you you're being recorded. It's illegal to record someone without their knowledge in the state of Louisiana. And I'm pretty sure it always has been. So I'm like, they had to told you. And once you go into a police station, you know, words and movements are being tracked. So it's like, you went into this police station, you went with a fucking lawyer. The lawyer lets you say all of this shit on tape but this is the reason you murdered her. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
You fucking psychopath. Like, what are you actually doing?
I don't know.
It's devastating, but it's also baffling.
It is. It really is. Senseless. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's just, and to be such a fucking idiot about it.
Well, and I feel like
such an idiot.
After Katrina, we all were so crazy that when it happened, I remember inklings of when this happened that we were all like, huh, like, because we were all kind of dead inside.
Yeah.
Now that retold it to me, it's so fucking shocking and awful.
I know.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting here thinking, I remember this all going down. Mm-hmm. And I remember them talking about, like, the list and thinking, like, what an idiot.
Yeah.
But I didn't, like, I didn't listen to all the details. I knew, you know, it was pretty, I mean, I thought it was pretty obvious, yeah, like, he did it. And I think it is, you know, he did do it. And I fully believe that. And I don't think anyone could really convince me otherwise. But like you said, I would have been a senior in high school when his trial went down. So, you know, it was like all over the news and shit. Yeah. And it's just like, I guess, like, just like you said, everyone was so affected by Katrina, yeah, that I think we just didn't process it. Like, when it happened,
yeah,
like, we just did not put two and two together because so many other random, ridiculous, crazy shit was happening. Yeah,
the news was just so
that we just
awful.
Didn't put two and
yeah,
exactly. Like, we just didn't, you know. Oh. And it sucks because I think too, like, we had so much devastation that I think maybe part of our brains just kind of turned it off because we didn't even, like, want to think about it. Because, yeah, until he passed away in February, I honestly have not thought about that man since all of that went down.
That's why.
So it's like I have blocked it from. Yeah. My memory.
That's why I think I'm glad that you did this, to not remember him so much as but to remember the victim in this case, because, you know,
totally,
like, such a, like, horrible time and a horrible event. And if this right. happened today, well, not during coronavirus, because that's a bad, you know, you know what I mean, if that
yeah.
would happen, like,
yeah,
you know, outside of a national tragedy, international tragedy,
right, just in regular
we would have
time
all
yeah
been like, that's the worst thing that's ever happened, you know,
exactly,
in this area,
exactly,
yeah,
because exactly.
it is,
but it wasn't,
it's,
I
terrible
mean, it is, it's a horrible thing yeah. that happened, and we were, I think, like you said, we were so emotionally numb yes. at that point that I don't think anyone was really paying attention. Yeah. I mean, okay, let's see, August 31st, I literally had just moved back a couple of months before that from when I lived in Atlanta after the hurricane. I just moved back. I was just getting back into Mount Carmel. Like, I was just, you know, like, I don't think any of us were, like, really conscious.
Yeah. that time. Like, I think I was.
You know, I just,
we were.
I just don't think, and.
No,
yeah,
we were.
And for her, I mean, she was a respiratory therapist at Children's Hospital. Yeah. Do you know how much good that woman did? Yeah. Like, no, you know, no one's a saint. And I'm sure she had her own, like,
sure,
you know, whatever. But it's like, everyone said that she was well-liked. She was fun. She was personable. Like, you know, all of these things. And it's just very, very sad that she just happened to find out.
Yeah.
She happened to get with this person who probably charmed the pants off of her. And
yeah.
yeah. Sorry. Making jokes in my head. But yeah. you know, it's just like, yeah. So when I remember when he passed away in February, I immediately thought, I was like, I'm going to have to do this. And I think right now is like such a good time, because just like you were saying, there's so many parallels between, like, having to social distance and staying home during coronavirus and being separated from your family and friends. That's exactly what we experienced during Katrina. So I think it did,
yeah.
you know, it is something that does resonate with what's going on now, because the same type of emotion is brought up, the same type of
yeah.
almost numbness, you know.
Yeah.
So huh. I know.
That's
crazy ride.
Very
man.
Wild ride with that one.
Wild. Yes. Freaking wild. I knew Ooh. It was going to be crazy, but it was even crazier than I thought it was going to be.
Seriously crazy. Yeah. yeah.
I know, man.
Anyway, good.
Some
good.
Shit.
You did a good job. That was
Thank
that was
you.
Complicated, but
it was, yeah, it was a lot. And like I said, I didn't know any of a lot of the, like, the bigamous thing
oh,
and like no, all
yeah.
of that kind of stuff until I watched the show. So I don't know why a lot of that wasn't. Maybe the show was so far after that they got more police transcripts and stuff like that.
Right.
Like, I don't know what that thing was, but when I was watching it, I had to pause it because I'm like, what the fuck? And I went back in. I read a New York Times article. I read a couple of other like national places picked this up, and no one said anything about that. Like, no one said, no one really said his motive. Like, no one shared like a motive of why he would kill his wife. And so when I heard that, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, that's crazy. Wow, that's a lot.
It was bananas. Yeah, it is bananas. Bananas. So I suggest everyone go get a drink, chill out after that. Like,
yeah.
Or if you're like me, you're probably going to go watch another Dateline episode.
Of course.
That's just what I do. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, thanks for doing that.
So, of course, just, you know, watch your back, man. Make sure to put in your vows. Like, don't kill me.
Yeah. Listen, I just feel like we can't date right now because
of
coronavirus again. And maybe that's not a bad thing right now. Like,
maybe it's not a bad thing.
We could just take some time off from
Take some time. Take some time. Let's soul search a little bit. Let's get away from, like, you know, the ideas of maybe murdering someone and just
definitely
step back from that. Let's drink a little. Well, that might incite more issues. It doesn't for me. Yeah. It helps.
For those, it helps. Exactly. So, but if people have story ideas that they're thinking about, like,
please email us. BigEasySpirits@gmail.com. Our website is BigEasySpiritsPodcast.com. And that also has a, like, little form thingy that you can, that'll be emailed to us as well. So let us know. I have a couple of people that have given me a couple more stories that I think are going to be super cool in the next coming week. Right. So I think we're going to have a good group of, you know, the last couple of ones were kind of more fun and, you know, random just because we're trying to get back in the, in the groove of recording remotely and not together. Definitely. So I think we've got a few things on the horizon that I think are going to be some good ones. Yeah. So stay tuned, follow us on social media, email us, visit our website, all the things. And cheers.